Good evening and welcome to Tuesday Topics. My name is Paul Edwards and I'm in a chilly Miami, Florida, where the temperature is in the high 40s. Feels a little more like Boston, Massachusetts than Miami, Florida. Welcome to Tuesday Topics. I'd like to begin by thanking Steve Bauer for recording this evening's program. And I'd also like to thank Steve for his editing job this evening and for his host job last Tuesday when we began the topic that we're actually on tonight. Obviously, I would like to thank George Byes of Talking Communities for making the software that we are using for this program available. This software allows us to talk to each other in the chat room that we're in and also allows us to record this program for posterity and for eventual editing onto our ACB Radio mainstream. Last week, Steve Bauer hosted a program that began to explore the issue of what it was like to raise children if you were a parent who was blind, or what it was like just in general to have contact with children if you were a blind person, whether there were some interesting issues that emerged. I don't know, because I have not, in fact, heard that program. So it is possible that some of the things that we'll talk about tonight will be repetitions of what we heard this last week, but I suspect that because the folks who are here are for the most part a different set of folks, that the ideas will be a little bit different, and certainly that the perspectives of each individual who is raising kids are almost certain to be different. Tonight, because we don't have a featured guest, we're going to kind of move around. I've talked with some of the folks who are here this evening about their situation, but if you would, when you talk with us for the first time, tell us where you are and where you're from, and then begin to deal with the question. And I guess I'm going to start by asking Anicio Correa, who is with us this evening, to sort of kick things off and tell us whether, from his perspective, being a parent who is blind is any different from being a parent who's sighted, and maybe what some of those differences might be. So, Anicio, why don't we start with you, and then we'll shoot it back to Cheryl.
Hi, good evening, everybody. This is Anicio Correa, and I'm here in Atlanta, Georgia. I have a 10-year-old daughter. Her name is Julia. And I am married to a sighted woman, a wonderful woman, by the way. And in thinking about this topic in preparation for the program tonight, I've thought about the fact that the way the challenges that I've had in raising Julia along with my wife Agnes have been different, obviously, based on age and her development. When Julia was born, and she's our first and only child, that was really my first experience with taking care of a baby and changing diapers. My background is professional background is in rehabilitation teaching, so I'm supposedly someone who is able to come up with adaptive techniques to teach people daily living skills, etc. So I, in good conscience, I could not have stopped myself from trying to do that, and I did, and I was able to do it relatively well, I think. At least Julia never complained, at least loud enough. I had a wonderful time in terms of, I'm going ahead of myself a little bit. Let me go back for a minute, because there's some issues I want to talk about later. The main difference is, and I see them every day because my wife is sighted, in terms of how I deal with Julia as a blind parent. A lot of it have to do with logistics, picking her up from school, taking her to school, taking her to soccer or basketball or whatever after school activity. Obviously, my wife drives, so she tends to do that a lot more often than I do because it's just easier. When I do it, I will either, depending on where I live, take the train and pick her up or take a taxi and pick her up. What I have noticed, and I will stop in just a second, what I have noticed is that when Julia was little, young, and by that I mean 6, 7, even 8 years old, she looked forward to me coming to school, picking her up in a taxi. She felt very special. For the first time this year, now that she's 10, I've noticed that she is becoming a lot more self-conscious. So, you know, my picking her up in a taxi, in a sense, makes her look different than the other kids. When at one time that was a positive thing for her and that she boasted about, now it's becoming more of a negative aspect.
Yeah, I'll have something to say about that later from my earlier incarnation with kids. I know that that I think that particularly from the time that kids become teenagers, they become, I think, much more ambivalent about having a blind parent. But let's let the only lady who's with us this evening, Cheryl, who happens to be my wife, talk a little bit about her experience raising kids.
That's really a hard question, Paul, because it's too huge of a question. I guess I'll play off of what Ignacio said. I have two daughters. First of all, I'm sorry, I'm in Miami, and I have two daughters, one who is 17, and she now married with a little child of her own, a few days old, and a 10-year-old. Both girls are sighted. The children's father is a sighted man. It's interesting because in the raising of our children at that time, even though he was sighted, there was a lot of things that just because he was sighted, he wasn't cognizant of at all. Sure, he could do, as a sighted person, he could go and pick up the kids, you know, as Ignacio said, and do those sort of things. But there wasn't the attention given to more of the issues of the heart, if you will. I don't know how else to describe it. How is the child responding? What kind of attitudes are they having? What kind of a tone of voice are they using in speaking to other people? I don't know how you other parents here feel about that, but I think we pay more attention to that. My sighted friends who are moms comment on that a lot, and they'll say, gosh, I don't even pay attention to that stuff. And their kids can be pretty mouthy and pretty disrespectful, and they don't even see it. So my eldest daughter, when you were talking about issues of embarrassment or what was positive when they were young, becoming an embarrassment as they get older, I think it depends on the child's personality. My older daughter, Missy, she didn't care. She was, my blindness didn't affect her as far as her friends. It didn't matter to her. I was just mom, and we were really close friends. Her problem, she has a lot of good things about her, but her problem with the blindness issue was that she was the kind of kid that decided, oh, mom can't see me, so guess what I can get away with? And because of the sighted partner not really caring about those sort of things, she got away with a lot, and it would grow worse and worse and worse. Hannah, my 10-year-old, is more the self-conscious type of a girl, and so it'll be interesting to see, and she has turned as that way, as you said, Ignacio. She's kind of always been that way, but I would say as she's heading towards adolescence, it's something that's starting to be more noticeable.
Thanks very much, Cheryl. One of the things that I've noticed with Hannah since I've been in her life is that she is a very caring and a very kind little girl, and is pretty eager to help when she can. I think one of the questions that operates for sighted kids with two blind parents, and that's Hannah's situation now, is do you get put in a situation sometimes where there are expectations laid on you because of the fact that both of your parents who are blind, that creates problems? And I know that Cheryl and I are both pretty conscious of that as an issue, and I'm not sure that we always handle it perfectly, because I don't know that there's any such thing as a perfect parent. But I do think that we're pretty conscious of the fact that we don't want Hannah to grow up as so many kids of deaf parents do, with the belief that Hannah is the intermediary between us and the rest of the world. And it's a real struggle for us traveling, for instance. How much do we rely on Hannah, and how much should we rely on asking for assistance? And we're working on that. It's I think, got to be a balance. But I think it is something, as a blind parent, that you have to be really conscious of, that it's really important to be very careful to draw lines that ensure that you allow your child to be a child, and that you don't rely on your child in ways that expect more of him or her, given his or her age. So I guess that's kind of my contribution. Let's see who else might want to jump in here with some experiences that they may have had as a parent that would shed light on some of the things that Anicio, Cheryl, and I have said, at least to begin this.
Hi, everybody. This is Rick. And I think I share some of the things that Ignatia said, only maybe a little more so, that I think that children of blind parents, and my wife and I are both blind, have a certain amount of resentment, or do develop a certain amount of resentment growing up, and mainly because they see themselves as different. They see that the sighted world treats blind people differently, maybe more so in certain cases than others, but always there's always that undercurrent of being treated a little bit differently. And while she's a well-adjusted adult now, I think some of these issues have come out since she's grown up, and we have a good relationship here, and she's married, and she lives about 10 miles from us, and she comes here once, twice a week, and we are happy to see our grandchild and whatnot, and so we have a good relationship. But some of the things that she said has implied that she felt a little bit cheated, like, why would I have had to have blind parents and couldn't have some of the same opportunities that other people have had? We weren't able to drive her here, there, or everywhere, although she did involve herself in a lot of extracurricular activities. But in those cases, maybe we had to depend on someone else to drive her there. Swimming lessons and this sort of thing is what I'm talking about. So I think she had a full life as a student growing up, and she went on to college and whatnot, and I don't think she was any way deprived, but I think she did feel different than other kids, and in the teenage years, that's an important factor in their lives, about how happy they are. What are other people seeing or thinking of them, and they don't like to be different. So I have found that to be a situation that, and I don't know if other people have found that or share this feeling of mine, but I know I have talked to other blind people whose children grew up to be even, I would say even hostile towards the parents. And I don't know, I can't, you know, maybe some of you people have some ideas you could share, but I don't know exactly what the dynamics are there, but and maybe there are other issues. Maybe there are marital tensions or what, I can't say, but I have talked to other blind parents whose children grew up to be quite resentful and even hostile towards them.
Does someone else want to jump in on this issue of resentment that kids may feel of blind parents?
Hello, Paul. This is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. I'm not married and have never had any kids, so I don't know if I'm out of place here, but I don't know, maybe if I heard that. But I did listen to the show last week, and I was impressed by one fact that somebody that was being interviewed said that the kids that are come into the world, you know, and then the person is blind, and in the early years, I guess the kids kind of get used to it. I mean, it doesn't seem to bother them at that early age, but I do see where, as has been mentioned here, that kids might become ambivalent about a blind parent, you know, as they get older, like in the teenage years, and I suppose that they're quite helpful, you know, when they're little and things, but maybe not so much, I suppose, as they may not want to do as much as they get older, but it can be quite a challenge, I do believe, for blind parents to raise sighted kids, at least I think.
Hi, this is Cheryl again. Rick, I think that was your name. I have two things to say, and they might seem quite simplistic, but they're things that are real to me. Number one is guilt, and that is that it's paramount, imperative, whatever verb or adjective, I sure know what I'm talking about, one wants to use, that the parent doesn't fall into the trap, because, gosh, it just is, of playing that game of that, yeah, I'm different, or yeah, you're different. Because once a parent does, and I wrestle with it, guilt is a weakness that I have of feeling like, you know, I'm it's my fault, or poor Hannah, you know, the poor Hannah thing, or the poor Missy. I went through that for a long, long time, and I still wrestle with it. And when a blind parent falls into that trap, it's a circular reasoning, and you stymie any forward movement at all. You just end up feeding you as general. I'm not speaking you personally. The person doing that ends up feeding that lie in their mind that they're guilty, that they're different, and it enforces it into the child, and then you get the depression going in the home, and on and on and on. It doesn't make a creative atmosphere at all to have forward movement, and which brings me to my second point. And my second point is that it's up to the child and the parent, yeah, but when we get the guilty thing going, we get it all focused on ourselves as parents. And we forget that our children have a responsibility to acquire, through our training and our involvement in their life, through our teaching, a right attitude that can be brought about by so many different ways. What about the pimples on their face? I mean, kids get acne, so now are they weird? Well, of course they feel weird. But what I'm saying is they have to learn how to deal with these kind of situations, and it's imperative for us as parents to focus on the positive of what we can do and are able to do, and not make these big distinctions that I'm blind so I can't, or I'm blind so you can't. How can we? How can we do this? Do you want to go play soccer? Okay, how are we going to go about doing it? Let's call some parents and see who lives close by and can come and pick you up. It means coming out of ourselves and not being so embarrassed to get a hold of parents and saying, you know what, this is my situation. And I have found that parents are more than happy. They're, oh, that's great. What can I do to help? So those are my two points. Is A, we can't fall into the guilty thing. It's non-productive. And B, that the child has just as vital of a responsibility to acquire right thinking. And it's our responsibility to help them to get that.
Oh, Cheryl, this is an easy, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think the other thing that I think I heard you saying, or at least imply, is that it is important for us as blind parents not to assume responsibility for parenting, and not use our blindness in any way as an excuse not to do this or that. Even though it may be tempting at times. And certainly in my case, where I'm married to a sighted woman, that temptation, can be more real at times. One of the things I do that I have done in order to address some of the embarrassment or maybe resentment that Julie may have at times, and this is more in the last year or so that she's beginning to, has begun displaying these kinds of feelings. One of the things I've always done, though, is to try to have our home to be very open and inviting for her friends. And I really, truly enjoy her bringing her friends over, so that, and partly it's a selfish reasons, because I feel like I can get to know them better in a safe environment, an environment that is very familiar to me. And they can get to see me function in a very independent and natural way. And that I find that, once I overcome that or cross that bridge with those kids, then obviously Julie is going to feel a lot more comfortable with them as well. With me, so I just give an. Speaking of this change that I've noticed in her during the past few months, and there's a lot of other things that have happened also. With we have recently moved and all that, so sometimes it's hard to tell what causes what. But anyway, Julie has gone to my wife not too long ago, maybe a couple months ago, and said to her, you know, Daddy is so perfect. You'd be just so perfect, most perfect parent in the world if it only could see. And I thought that was, I mean, it was the first time, I think, that she ever brought that up. So obviously we had a conversation about that, and, you know, I don't know that I, you know, totally addressed those feelings that she may have, but I thought it was kind of interesting that she was able to verbalize that.
I think that the sighted blindness dynamic of a couple in a household is certainly an interesting one. Cheryl dealt with that for several years, and of course I did as well, till my eldest was, gosh, 15 or so. And I think that one of the things that I know I did, and I think I did it pretty consciously, and I think it was probably in the long run the right thing to do, because there were some specific tasks that it was simply easier for the sighted parent to do, like driving kids around, I probably took more responsibility as a parent, as a blind parent, than I might have had I been a sighted parent, because I wanted to be sure that I was pulling my weight, and I wanted to be sure that my kids perceived me as pulling my weight as well, and that they perceived my abilities, not my disability, as a core issue. So one of the things that came up a little while ago is virtually all the time that my kids woke up at night when they were babies and needed to be fed, I was the one who got up and got bottles warmed and fed babies and changed diapers and let my wife sleep. Even though, as a sighted person, she was not working. She was actually at home. And actually even had some help during the day in terms of looking after the kids. But I still wanted to do that, partly because there were some things that I simply couldn't do around the house, and I wanted to be very clear that I was pulling my own weight, but also partially because it gave me a good opportunity of establishing a relationship with my kids. And I think when they were young, as everybody has said, there wasn't as very many problems. One of the first times that there began to be a major problem with my kids was the first time we went to Disney World. So that was when they were, oh gosh, probably the eldest was probably 10 and 11, the others were 9 and 7. And their thing was interesting because they were absolutely convinced that the folks at Disney World, whenever a blind guy was riding on their rides, would slow the rides down, and they thought that was absolutely atrocious. So they would beg me not to go on the ride. And I wouldn't listen because I wanted to go on the rides anyway. But that was the first time. And I think that the other thing that I'd like to talk about a little bit, and I'll come back and talk about my experiences, is what was or what has been your experience in dealing with the school system as a blind parent? And there are perhaps several of you who'd like to comment on that. I know for me, there are some interesting issues that came up. So I would be interested in perhaps getting some feedback, because one of the things that blind parents obviously ought to be doing is getting involved in their children's education. Does the school system make that easy, or does it in fact make it hard?
Probably, now that we moved here to Atlanta, and Julie's in obviously a new school, this is probably the school where I have been able to be more involved, not so much because of the school itself, but because of the fact they are so much more electronically savvy with the computer and stuff, and all the her fifth grade class has its own website on the school's website. All their projects, homework projects for the semester are on the web. So I'm finding myself, I'm finding a lot easier to help her with homework and check on what, ask questions about what she's done, et cetera, in school. More so than in the past in Maine, in the school that she was attending. I mean, they were wonderful, and I knew all the teachers, and I certainly went to all the parent-teacher conferences, etc. But in terms of actually on the day-to-day being able to follow her progress and correct her homework or whatever was difficult because everything was on paper. And frankly, I never really advocated a whole lot with them to change that. But I am so pleased here with the school that, you know, all their communication with the parents is via email. And and as I said, a lot of their assignments and stuff, projects, the work that they do is on their own class website. So that has made my life a lot easier in that respect.
We seem to be batting the ball back and forth, Inicio. I think probably I had some of my best experiences and some of my worst experiences with the school system. Some of the best were working with kids on some specific projects, and that was actually fun to do. Some of those projects the kids really enjoyed. But the worst experience I think I probably ever had as a parent was going to a PTA meeting and also going to class conferences. There were times during our marriage where I ended up going by myself and therefore wandering with the kids, looking at what they were doing in school, talking with teachers. And in one of the schools, the kids were kind of separate and the parents were kind of foregathered in one area. And I think that I never felt so isolated in my life as I did at that PTA meeting, where no matter how often I talked with parents, it was simply very clear that they were uncomfortable with having a blind person there representing his kids. They didn't like it, they didn't know how to deal with it, and my kids were resentful of the fact that I was there and their mom wasn't. And perhaps more importantly than all of that, I think that the school and the PTA had not done anything to become conscious of any obligations that they might have had in terms of how to deal with a blind person. And I really felt very unwelcomed at this PTA. I would turn around and say something to a parent, and the parent would make a kind of a monosyllabic response and then very clearly and consciously say, "Well, listen, I got to go. So, gosh, it was nice meeting you. Bye." And they're gone. I felt extremely powerless in that situation because there didn't seem to be very much that I could do to actually change the situation as it operated in the school system. I continued to try and I continued to go and I continued to require that my kids accept the fact that I had a right and would exercise that right in terms of being involved in their education, because I wasn't going to change that. Those are certainly some of the factors with the school system that were difficult for me. I think that Inicio is absolutely right. It would actually be so cool to be raising a child now where you actually would be in a position to ask at least for more access to the materials that kids are working on. I'm going to hog the mic for a minute because I want to raise another question and see what the feeling of the folks is, because it was one that got raised at an ACB convention last year and that I've discussed with a number of school districts throughout the country with very mixed results. A year ago at the convention, I was approached by a blind parent who said, "I have a kid who's learning disabled, he's not blind, and he's in the fifth grade. And I want to be able to help him with his homework. In order to do that, I need to have access to his textbooks and I need to have access to his homework assignments. Does the school system have an obligation to make those available to me?" My initial reaction was, gosh, that's a really tough one. Certainly other parents are encouraged to work with their kids, but does encouragement constitute a legal obligation? And I said that I didn't know the answer, helped her to write a resolution that at least moved us in some appropriate directions at the ACB level, and then started asking school districts and states. And I found that in many states, the attitude is, "We don't have any responsibility, and if the parent is blind, so be it. He'll have to figure out with his or her kid how to get access to that material. We're not accepting that responsibility." On the other hand, I was very excited to find that here in Florida, that's not the attitude. The head of the Florida Instructional Materials Center made it clear to me that if I, as a blind parent, wanted a copy of a textbook that my sighted child was using, they would have absolutely no problem in making that available to me, and actually felt like it was, in fact, an obligation that they had. So We've talked quite a lot about school. Does somebody else want to jump in and perhaps either talk about what's been going on, express an opinion as to whether school districts ought to be required, and then finally perhaps raise some questions with either Anisha or I or others. Interestingly enough, and we may talk about this in a while, Cheryl homeschooled both of her daughters, which meant that her relationship with their education was far closer than even Anisha's and mine with our children was. So has anybody else had some experiences with the school system that they might like to share, either good or bad?
I was just going to say, the way you explained that story when you visited the school, it seemed almost as though you had never encountered that kind of situation before, where you've been more or less ostracized or to a degree ignored by sighted people, that it's reasonable you would expect better. But the way you posed that, it was almost like how shocking that sighted people would treat me that way.
I think it had to do with the extremeness of the treatment. And also, I think it probably had to do with the fact that I really regard myself as a pretty outgoing, pretty approachable sort of individual. And so I haven't really had to deal with it very often. Certainly occasionally in stores, you end up with a customer service person who's a puke. And I've certainly had lots of experiences of that kind. But for the most part, I've actually been able to interact one-on-one with teachers or to interact one-on-one with administrators without a problem. And the only time that I think I've ever really felt as isolated was when I was in this large group of parents where it actually became clear that A, they were really uncomfortable, and that translated into the fact, and it worried me a lot, that probably they trained their kids to be uncomfortable too, and therefore my children might in fact be having a pretty hard time at school.
I'm curious, Paul, you mentioned Cheryl raised her two kids, homeschooled her two children. I met at, I don't remember now if it was the NFP or the Georgia Council of the Blind ACB convention this summer, a blind woman who is raising her child, homeschooling her child, and she's having a whole lot of problems with the textbook, the instructional materials, local center saying that she's not eligible to get these materials because her child is being homeschooled, and she's really having a lot of problems in that situation.
Cheryl, do you want to jump in and talk a little bit about the homeschooling experience and getting hold of materials? And I don't know that you've really reached out very much asking public school systems to be very helpful, and you've used, in fact, another approach. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how the co-op works so that people will have a better idea of the way homeschooling works. In some respects, homeschooling may in fact have some real advantages for a blind parent because of the arrangements that have grown up around homeschooling and some of the options that are out there.
Ignacio, am I understanding the situation that this mom is wanting to use curriculum that the same school curriculum, but just doing it at home, and is asking the school district to make that curriculum available for her?
I believe so. I'm not sure. I don't know if it was the same curriculum or not that you mentioned that. I don't know if there's a separate curriculum for homeschooling. But whatever curriculum she needed, she didn't seem to have access to it, and was told that was having a hard time getting it in an accessible format. Now, whether it was from the local school district itself or from the Instructional Materials Center or from the Homeschool Association, that I'm not sure.
There are laws that will protect her, and obviously she'll have to look into what the laws are, usually posted on the web for her state, and kind of have to work in that direction. Homeschooling materials curriculum can come in various and ascendary ways. There are tons and tons of curricula, is that a proper word, available. Abeka, Pace, it just goes on and on and on with the different programs that are available for homeschooling. That is, if you want to follow a rigid, regimented, if you want to call it that, curriculum, and you might say, gosh, well, how do you homeschool if you don't follow a curriculum? That's done via all kinds of different materials, and I'll answer that question in just a second. The trouble with the curriculum, first of all, I remember going to my first homeschooling meeting, which there should be a support group. There should be several. I don't know how big your community is, but if it's a substantial town at all, city, there should be ample resources for her where she can go and talk to other moms and meet with other homeschooling moms who will, of course, have to go through all of the, oh, how do you do that when you're blind? When I went to my first meeting and I asked the moms there, what curriculum do you use? They all busted up laughing. And I thought, gosh, what did I say that was so funny? And as I got further along in homeschooling, I realized what was so funny. But curriculum is followed by some parents. They'll find that it's really the way they want to go, and they'll have a set hours that they want to have their kids working, and they're going to sit at that desk by George, and they're going to do their work, and they're going to do the book, and it's done like clockwork, and it's just sort of like public school only at home. If you go that route as a blind parent, it is frustrating, especially certain curriculum. Abeka is one. It's an excellent curriculum. It's about 2 years ahead of regular standard curriculum in the public school system, but it's so pictorial that when you ask your child to please explain what's going on in the page, they have to do a lot of verbal description, and you're still sitting there going, what? And I have seen for part of my life, and so I have good concepts of pictures, and it still was confusing for our family. For the girls and I, what we've done through the years, and what probably a very, very high percentage of homeschoolers do, is you piece together curriculum. You use your local library. You can go to a Costco, and you can find a big book there that well, they have different titles, the Big Book of Learning. There's just different books. They cover all the different subjects for different grade levels. Very straightforward, that a child, once they can read, and you can teach them to read without, sight. Lots of manipulatives. The more hands-on things that you can do. You can go and get cookie cutters that are done in the alphabet, and you can use those as your letters to, you can tactually feel them. You can spell words with them. You just find all kinds of what are called manipulatives that when you're teaching fractions, you fold papers and you do different things that are way more hands-on. The whole point of homeschooling is to not sidetrack on a homeschool thing, but I think it's really important in what we're talking about, because the whole point of homeschooling is to find out what kind of learner your child is, whether they're auditory, whether they're a visual learner, or whether they're a hands-on learner. And most children are a mixture of one or two of those things. Some of them are definitely one. And the beauty of homeschooling is not that you buy curriculum and you have them sit down and do this regimented thing, unless they are just this absolute bookie kind of person and thrive in that environment. But most kids don't. Most kids want to move around, explore their environment. They want to touch and smell and taste and feel and see and all of that stuff. And you can bring learning to them in a much more free way, taking your child into the kitchen and saying, okay, math today is baking a batch of cookies, because it's working with fraction. And you can take that whole recipe and say, okay, we're going to double it. Now what do you have to do? And they have to do that. You can play store, so they learn money. There's just, I don't want to go on and on, but I'm trying to give you some ideas for your friend, is that if she can relax, and that's underlined with an exclamation mark, if she can relax and not feel that everything has to be regimented, and if she can understand that school happens from when you wake up in the morning till when you go to bed at night, and that there are teachable moments throughout every part of the day that you can grab. And once they have a question about something, oh, well, let's learn. Hannah asked me something the other day. She said, why do moths like light? Oh, well, that's a cool science question. So you can take their energy, they're very self-motivated if you get them in an environment where learning is a pleasure. I hope that is some sort of an answer.
I think virtually everyone is impressed with the academic achievements of homeschool kids. I mean, we hear about anecdotes and we hear on TV how the kids win spelling bees and whatnot. So, I mean, I think it's pretty remarkable and what can be accomplished in homeschooling. My question would be about the socialization of the children, the opportunities to socialize in the way that they can in public school. And you can steer me straight on this because I don't know very much about it. I'm intrigued with homeschooling, but I don't know that much about it. But I would think that the environment that you create is a very wholesome one, but one that is very sheltered in a way, where the kids don't necessarily interact with all kinds of kids from different cultures and different backgrounds, and wouldn't have the opportunities to engage in sports in the same level as they can in the public school, or even a private school for that matter. And there wouldn't be as much give and take, and that the kids would be, I'm thinking, even overly protected, which might be good in the beginning, but as they get older and now finally they're thrown into a wider environment, wow, it would be like a splash of cold water, because it's not always a friendly world out there. It could be a hostile world, and not everybody's very nice. So it seems to me that would be like a bath of cold water when they're then suddenly exposed to a much more open environment. And as I said, you can set me straight. Maybe I'm totally barking up the wrong tree. But from being an outsider to this whole issue, that's what I would be concerned about.
If a homeschool family operates in a sheltered way, you're right. The balance of all the families I know are quite busy, depending on your city again, but there is what's called the homeschool co-op. And they meet, usually what it is a gathering of, the one in Seattle has 500 kids in it. I think there's plenty of social interaction there. And what happens is families get together for however many days a week that particular co-op sets up, and they have classes all day long. Some of the teachers are professional teachers that have quit their public school jobs and are now teaching in the co-op because they say the kids are so much better behaved. They like it a lot better, and they say that they know the kids are really studying, and they see a lot of proof of it, so they want to. It's very rewarding for them. There are just so many. There's community choir. There is usually city Little League, Rainbow Girls, Boy Scouts, on and on and on we could go. Again, a parent has to reach out and get their child involved, but you have to have a balance. So, no, children who are homeschooled, that's a very large myth that they don't get interaction. 90%, I can very, very confidently say that 90% of homeschooling children are very integrated into social activities with other kids.
So homeschooling is certainly one of the options. Let's see. We've talked some about younger kids. Let's venture into the realm of teenagers for a little while. I'm not sure how many of us have had experiences. I know Rick has had experiences as bringing up a kid as a teenager. Were there any overt indications from your kid when she was a teenager, Rick, that suggested that he or she was uncomfortable with you as a blind parent?
No, and that's what I tried to imply earlier, that it was nothing overt like that at all. It took, at least on my part, a certain amount, and my wife's part, a certain amount of interpretation. And it really didn't surface till later. And I think it mainly stemmed from the fact that, why does she have to be different? I mean, the mere fact of having blind parents, that can be a stigma all by itself. Not necessarily because the parents have done anything wrong. It's because the fact that they're blind. And just to give you a little anecdote or where I'm going with this, my grandson is now 3 years old, and I have a lot of fun with him when he comes over. My wife does too, of course, and we play with him and do all kinds of things. And he's just now realizing that my wife and I, Grandma and I, are blind. So when he was home with his mom, he said, "Mommy, is their little dog? What's your dog's name?" Jasmine can see with her eyes, right? And Laura said, yes, that's right. And you can see with your eyes, and I can see with my eyes. What about Grandpa? Can he see with his eyes? And Laura said, no, Grandpa can't see with his eyes. And he said, well, what about Grandma? Grandma can see with her eyes because her eyes are always open. And Laura said, no, she can't. She can't see with her eyes either. Well, I noticed that the next couple of weeks when my son, grandson, Dalton, came over, he acted a little estranged to me because now he realized the situation is different than what he had perceived. And now he was wondering, well, Grandpa's blind. I have trouble with that. I don't know how to sort that out. And he's gotten a bit better lately, and we're doing this, playing the same games and whatnot as we did in the past. But I could tell that that didn't sit too comfortably with him. So in a roundabout way, I'm trying to answer your question, that it's a perception that all is not as it should be.
Thanks very much, Rick. Right now, I'm married to Cheryl, who is blind, and of course I'm blind, and Rick is a blind-blind relationship, and Isio is blind-sighted. I've been through blind-sighted, so has Cheryl. I would be interested in some feedback about whether people think raising a kid is in fact significantly easier if you have a blind-sighted environment, or whether blind-blind environment may in fact make things easier.
Just a quick question. I didn't get any reaction to what I said, and I don't know if I'm way off in another world or anything like that. I appreciate if someone disagrees with me or agrees with me, at least so I know I'm not going off in the wrong direction. You don't have to agree with me. Just let me know whether I'm heading in the right direction or maybe I'm off somewhere and I can correct my course.
Rick, a lot of this stuff is really not a I'm assuming Paul will agree with me too. There's no right or wrong. In many ways we talk about feelings and kids' perception and how they deal with it and pressures from other kids. So the way I look at it, all we can do is do the best we can at that moment and help kids deal with it themselves. To answer Paul's question about which one might be easier, in terms of a couple, blind with sighted or blind, both partners are blind. I don't know because I don't really have an experience with being married to a blind woman. However, I would think just from a practical point of view, certainly having a sighted spouse is helpful in some ways for some of those practical tasks that we've talked about, for whether it's driving. And I sort of don't want to minimize my wife's role to that of driving Julia around, because she's such a wonderful woman and a wonderful mother. So I don't know that it's easier, but it certainly is it makes things a little bit more manageable probably.
Hi, this is Cheryl again. Coming from both sides of the fence, I would like to say that I'd like to suggest that we exchange the word easy for convenient, because convenient, that's a whole different ballgame. Sure, it is far more convenient to have the built-in taxi service as opposed to having to figure out how to get there yourself. And sure, it's way more convenient to find quick answers to things or whatever, but on the other side of the fence, I don't really notice any difference when it comes down to the nitty-gritty, in-and-out, everyday things of life. There really isn't that much difference. And I know that I could worry about the issues of, what are they going to sneak home? What are they going to do behind my back? I went through that already, as I earlier alluded to, with my daughter. And that was even being married to someone who was sighted. I think that we can go to one extreme or the other. I think we can go to the extreme that says, gosh, you've got to have some sight somewhere, or you're up a creek, and you can start getting pretty fearful and doubtful of your own abilities. Or you can go to the other pendulum and say, no sight, it just doesn't even matter. And I don't think that's exactly realistic, because, like I say, there are some conveniences that come with having sight. But I think, and maybe I'm too idealistic and too simple, but I think that relationship with our kids is the key, most important thing, being able to communicate with them, being able to establish from an early age communicating skills, I think that's really important, and establishing in our children a conscience. Because if we do that, whether we're sighted or not, our child is going to behave the way they're going to behave. And my brothers tried to pull off a whole bunch of garbage and did a really good job at it with two-sighted parents. So I think the focus, we're talking about sight, really needs to be on trust, relationship with our children, building a rapport with our children, teaching them to care enough about themselves and their own integrity and their own reputation and their own image that they'd want to be on it. And if they have two blind parents or if they have two-sighted parents, those issues are never changing. They're the same.
One of the things that I hope it fits here, because I don't want to forget it, I think as a blind parent, it's so important for us to not to take what our children feel or how they see us for granted. And by that I mean, I'll give you a personal example. I lived in New York City many, many years. And of course, New York is probably the most accessible blind-friendly, if I may say so, most accessible city. You know, walk everywhere, take the train, subway everywhere, etc. And I did. I lived by myself for many, many years. And then, you know, I got married and we had a child. And when Julia was 3, we moved from New York City to Maine to a much slower pace. We did it on purpose because we thought it would be a better place to raise a child for the first few years. And my wife was then able to, because of the cost of living, she was able to stay home with Julia until she went to school. And I remember so clearly one day we're talking at home and I went to work and I come home and Julia must have been 4 or maybe 5. And we were talking about New York, you know, how, I don't know what I said, something about living by myself. And she said, Daddy, you live by yourself? And I said, yes. And she said, how did you go to the grocery store? And all of a sudden I realized that this girl was questioning my ability to do a lot of things because she didn't see me do it. Because I was going to work every day and I was coming home, and my wife, you know, she was going to the store and doing the shopping and all that kind of stuff. And she was attributing that not to the fact that her mom was home, therefore she was doing that, but she was attributing the fact that she was doing that because she was sighted and I was blind. And I tell her, that's one of the time when I start thinking, okay, we got to move again, because I have to move to a place where I can show her by my example and my actions on a daily basis that I can do all these things. It just struck me that it's not enough to talk about independence and talk to your child. You know, it's the example is what they see on a daily basis that really matters in many ways. The way they look at you and the way that their friends will look at you as well.
Hello, this is Danny. Of course, I grew up totally blind all my life, and my sister was only 2 years younger than I was. And so for her, I went to a little nursery school run by the Lions Club, you know, with about 12 people in it. And so for her, she was encouraged to attend also, just because that way us blind kids would have some sighted kids around. You know, there were other kids in there, and we would all be with each other, you know. It was no big deal. And so for her, it was no big deal that I could do this and do that and all that stuff. But then I had a younger sister. Many years later, she, every time somebody came over, she had to tell them, oh, he's blind. And I had to sit her down one day and tell her, hey, listen, it's no big deal. You will see me do many things and it won't be any big deal. You know, and it's very strange how, you know, it makes a big difference if kids see other kids close to their age or not. You know, and I was, by that time, my little sister was, oh gosh, I was probably 15 and she was 4. So that's a giant age span. Whereas Martha was very close to my age, and so it was easy for her to see that I could do this and that.
I think those are good points, Danny. And I think what we're all saying in one way or another is it is probably just as important to measure the quality of parenting that you're prepared to offer and the degree to which you keep communication open and have high expectations of your children as it is whether parents are blind or sighted. having sight doesn't necessarily make a good parent. I ended up leaving my first marriage, among other things, because my wife at that point was not able to be a good parent for a variety of reasons. And I am absolutely convinced that when two of my three children ended up being with me for parts of their teenage years, they got a much more stable and a much more effective environment living in my house than they would have gotten living with their mom. I think we need to focus on also the fact that technology actually makes it a lot easier for us, I think, to be better parents, not only because of the school system, but because we can acquire and scan the books that our kids may want to have us read. There are small note takers that make it pretty easy for us to read to kids anywhere. In cars is a good example, on airplanes is another, where many times sighted people would actually be pretty uncomfortable trying to read, certainly couldn't read and drive. The bottom line for me, I think, and what's come out tonight in all of our discussion, is it is the quality of parenting and being open to a range of parenting options and being imaginative about how you exercise those parenting options that, in fact, is probably more important than the dynamic of who can see and who can't in the environment. I'd like to thank all of you for joining me this evening on Tuesday Topics and encourage all of you to tune in next week to Tuesday Topics on ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community.
To participate in the recording of Tuesday Topics, we invite you to join us on Tuesday evenings in the U.S. at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's Wednesday, 1 hour Universal Time. The program is recorded in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. The first time you enter the chat room, the software will automatically download and install on your computer. All you need is a microphone that is plugged into your computer sound card. A few minutes before each show begins, those online will be happy to assist with audio checks and to answer questions about the chat room service and how it works. An announcement promoting the topic to be discussed will be emailed to the ACB Radio Friends list early each week. So we hope you will come and join us Tuesday each week when Tuesday Topics is being recorded. Again, the URL is ourplace.acbradio.org.